Ohio Catskill.
Live from the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Third time's the charm. The leaky Delaware River Aqueduct is now scheduled to be shut down in October. The twice-postponed project seeks to repair a minor leak in Ulster County and a major leak under the Hudson River, which is the path used to get Delaware River water to New York City. We'll chat with Meg McGuire of Delaware Currents for the latest. Sullivan Public Library Alliance is hosting the Sullivan County Youth Book Festival in Monticello this spring with 33 authors and illustrators. We'll get a preview. And it's ramp season. Wild Hudson Valley is celebrating with a ramp and forage festival at the Catskill Brewery coming up Saturday. We'll learn more. And it's Workshift Live with James B. Huntington, Local Economic Perspective. But first, the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. A judge has found former President Donald Trump in contempt for violating a gag order for a second time. The announcement was made this morning as Trump's criminal hush money trial resumed in New York City. The judge has threatened Trump with jail time if he violates the order again. The Israeli military is urging Palestinian civilians to evacuate areas of Rafah in southern Gaza. More than 1 million people have been sheltering there amid the conflict. Scott Anderson is with the United Nations relief agency that works with Palestinian refugees.
I do think we'll see movement of people. I do think that people are frightened. I do think if there is not an opportunity for innocent civilians to leave before conflict starts, the results would be catastrophic.
The Israeli army says it's expanded a humanitarian region near the coast that includes field hospitals, tents, food, water, and other supplies. Columbia University has announced that it's canceling its main commencement ceremony. The decision comes after the school began suspending students who refused to leave their encampments in protest of the war in Gaza. A man in Texas is asking a district court to intervene after a woman he was dating traveled out of state to have an abortion. Texas Public Radio's Jerry Clayton reports.
An attorney for Colin Davis filed a legal petition last month after he learned the woman planned to travel to Colorado to get an abortion. As first reported in the Washington Post on Friday, the state filing is asking the court for permission to pursue wrongful death claims against anyone involved in helping the woman get the procedure. A recently passed Texas law targets anyone who assists in abortions, including doctors. Abortion rights activists fear the laws may be used to threaten or intimidate doctors or others in states where the procedure is legal. I'm Jerry Clayton in San Antonio.
Stocks opened higher this morning as the nation's largest meat packer trimmed some fat. NPR's Scott Horsley reports.
Tyson Foods reported better-than-expected quarterly profits. The meatpacking giant has been working to cut costs, shuttering half a dozen chicken processing plants, as well as cutting some headquarters staff. Overall, sales at Tyson fell just shy of forecast. The company's beef sales rose for the first time in over a year. Other big companies set to report earnings this week include Disney, Anheuser-Busch, Uber, and Airbnb. Stocks were up in Hong Kong and Shanghai overnight. Markets were closed for a holiday in Seoul and Tokyo. Japan's government is thought to be trying to prop up the yen. In recent days, the currency has enjoyed a modest rebound against the dollar. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
This is NPR News in Washington. Some of the most prestigious awards in American journalism will be announced today. NPR's Netta Ulaby reports winners of the Pulitzer Prize will be announced this afternoon at Columbia University.
Columbia University has been in the news itself recently. The campus has been the site of demonstrations in support of Palestinian human rights, with clashes between opposing sides, an occupied building, and major police action. The Pulitzer Board issued a statement recognizing the student journalists covering such protests in the face of what it called great personal and academic risk. The board especially singled out student journalists at Columbia, describing their work as extraordinary in difficult and dangerous circumstances. The Pulitzers usually give out around 23 awards each year, most in journalism, but also in music, drama, history, fiction, and other literary categories. Netta Ulibi, NPR News.
Pop star Madonna capped off her celebration tour with a free concert on the beaches of Rio de Janeiro last night. Officials estimate the crowd on Copacabana Beach was estimated at roughly 1.5 million people. The 65-year-old has racked up 12 number one hits on the Billboard Hot 100 since 1983. Madonna kicked off her latest tour in October and has performed in dozens of cities throughout North America, Europe, and South America. On Wall Street, the Dow was up 136 points. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include TimberTech, transforming landfill-bound waste into sustainable PVC and composite outdoor decking products designed to look like real wood. More at TimberTech.com. Everything wood should be.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The New York City Department of Environmental Protection plans to shut down the Delaware Aqueduct in October until the spring of 2025 to repair leaks in the aqueduct. The system leaks were discovered in the 90s, and they're releasing upwards of 35 million gallons per day. This is the third time a projected start date has been planned for repairs. Is the third time the charm? Let's ask Meg McGuire, founder and publisher of Delaware Currents. Delaware Currents is the news project dedicated to telling the story of the Delaware River from its headwaters here in the Catskill Mountains to the Delaware Bay where it meets the ocean. Good morning, Meg.
Good morning, Tim. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for being here. So again, third time's the charm. This project's been postponed a couple of times. Do we think it's going to move forward this time?
I will borrow a quote from Jen Garigliano, who is the New York City DEP. She's their director of
Water Resources Management.
Thank you. I just couldn't find it. Anyway, borrowing a phrase from her, she says, if anyone has a crystal ball, please lend it to me. Well, she has first choice of refusal. If anyone has one, give it to Jen, and then she'll let us know. The problems that they've been facing are like what I didn't even really understand until the beginning of this project now several years ago was that there are a lot of connecting communities that take their water from the New York City water supply. So all of those communities had to be sort of held harmless when there was going to be a change in the water distribution system. So that was a thing. Then there was another thing of, I think this was last year, when they emptied the aqueduct, there was a lot more input from the river in the area of flooding, and what they had to do was figure out ways to keep the people who are going to go down there to do the job safe. So there was more electricity, more pumping, more machinery, that sort of stuff. The thing is, though, looming behind what they find to be the problems is whatever problems Mother Nature throws at us. Right? They are planning this for the time that it would make the most sense, right? They're doing the best they can, one hopes, of course, to guess what's going to happen. But if there are a lot of hurricanes or there's a way more rain than they perhaps have forecast, that could create problems at different stages in this shutdown. The session that I was listening to was a Zoom webinar that included, obviously, Jen's report and also one of the managers of the water resources for the Delaware River Basin is Amy Shallcross. And she did her own analysis of what might happen. And essentially, there is a risk of drought to the river in the early part of the shutdown, sort of August through to November. Then there is a risk of flooding from December through to May. Any of those things, they could weather and still do the repair, but if it gets to be enormous, they can shut down the repair project. But depending where they are in the project, that shutdown could take a week to 9 weeks. So it's not going to be an instantaneous remedy if there's a problem. And the way she described the flooding situation, which I think is the thing that the upper river is probably most concerned about, she's saying that there's a small increase in the risk of minor flooding. Of course, if it floods your basement, it doesn't feel minor. I'm not blaming the NYC DEP. Flooding happens, and it's a giant pain in the ass for the people that to whom it happens. It depends on storm. It depends on the track intensity, amount of precipitation, and prior rainfall. It depends on where that storm might be and the river's shape. So in some places, the river course is fairly narrow, so there's less space for the river to spread, so therefore it's more likely to flood.
Yeah.
And the point that they make, and they've made many times, is main stem flooding is possible even if the reservoirs do not spill, because only 14% of the drainage area above Trenton is controlled by the New York City reservoirs. I think there is a sense that the reservoirs can sort of immediately impact the flooding situation as far away as Easton or Trenton. And that becomes a hard parallel to make, because there is a lot of territory between where the reservoirs are and Easton or Trenton.
Yeah,
now, granted, there are times when the reservoirs may impact it, but they are actually far fewer than a lot of people think.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit more about these risks, but I want to back up a little bit to something you mentioned about all of the communities in the Delaware River watershed that must share the river's water. That is actually according to a U.S. Supreme Court decree from 1954, which gives New York City the right to take that water, but it also has to provide the right amount of water for all of the downstream communities in New York, Pennsylvania, and New Jersey that depend on the Delaware River for their water, for drinking water. So the meeting you were talking about this last week was from the Regulated Flow Advisory Committee, one of the advisory committees that the DRBC, the Delaware River Basin Commission, set up. Jennifer Gargliano is the chair of that, as well as being the director of water resources management for the New York City DEP. So they were meeting to ensure that there's the right amount of water in the river for fish and people.
Yes, that's the goal here, is that the ecosystems, especially of the northern parts of the river, are sensitive to what could be this very, it can be very swing, like the river's really full and then the river's sort of empty, and all the little critters that depend on a certain amount of constancy in the river can be affected when there's too much dramatic, you know, increase and decrease. So the regulated flow, that's exactly what it's trying to do, regulate the flow so that the fish can survive, so all of the whole ecosystem of the upper river can survive, but also by regulating the flow, hopefully to manage the swings so that people aren't affected by it as well.
So before
the thing is, that Supreme Court decision came because New York City was building those reservoirs, and New Jersey was like, hey, wait a minute. But every time states have an argument, it doesn't go anywhere but directly to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court decided New York City had the right to take the water, but then they have to ensure that, as you said, communities south of the reservoirs have enough water to be able to supply their drinking water needs.
So the plan is, before the shutdown, the NYC DEP is going to draw down the three Delaware River reservoirs by about 30%. Is that right? Yeah. And so there's a lot of questions about how that could affect downstream communities.
I am taking both Jen and Amy's word for this, that it is within the shape of the agreement that was reached in 2017. So what happens, the flexible flow management program has been re-upped many times in the course of the reservoirs being where they are. The flexible flow management program was reestablished after a lot of negotiation in 2017. And according to the folks who know more than I do, it has enough flexibility to address the potential impacts. The idea of the 30% drawdown will mean that during the summer, instead of sometimes the water in the river being a little skimpy, it probably won't be skimpy. But it means, according to their understanding of the FFMP guidelines, the drawdown will happen within those guidelines, and there shouldn't be an excessive risk of flooding in the period of time of the drawdowns. Generally speaking, between, June and October, there is less rain. There is a tendency for there to be less water in the river. So what the impact will likely be is that there will be more water in the river, but not to an excessive degree. That's according to the people who in theory know about what our impacts are likely to be and how the FFMP works.
And the releases are planned in June, before again the shutdown planned in October.
They're actually planned, Tim, throughout the summer. So it's not going to be suddenly that in June you're going to have, you know, a wall of water coming out of the reservoirs. There's going to be releases over the course of the summer to allow them to get to 30% in October.
And some of the other preliminary findings, according to the FFMP of 2017, was that they're saying they have the flexibility to address these impacts, that there will be that drought is caused, quote-unquote, by the shutdown, is unlikely. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I think essentially, you probably already know this, that the DRBC issues drought warnings and such like for the river itself. The DRBC does not issue drought warnings or anything of that sort for any of the states. So if you live in a city like Hancock, it's up to New York State to declare a drought for Hancock. The same thing is true if you live in Philadelphia or Wilmington or Trenton, right? But for the river, the prognostication is that the drought, which is the threat in the early part of the shutdown, seems to be unlikely, right? The conservation releases, which I was just talking about within the FFMP, the releases are likely to fatten the river a bit more than usual. So that's why in the findings from the DRBC analysis, conservation releases are likely to be normal or better. Where there's a little bit of wiggle room is in the flooding aspect. Mm-hmm. And the way the DRBC categorizes that is towards the end of the period of shutdown, there is, they say, a small increase in the risk of minor flooding.
And as part of your article at DelawareCurrents.org, you provided a graphic that the DRBC provided, which is a precipitation outlook for July through September. And as you say in the article, that outlook looks pretty intense.
Yeah. Yeah, I look at that and go, I'm really glad I don't have Jen Grigliano's job. there is a lot of energy in where the hurricanes come from, how they're formed, what their directions are, and stuff like that. There is, as we enter the era of climate change, as I say so many times in these interviews, we can expect more of everything we've ever had, more rain, more droughts, and more hurricanes. The impact of those hurricanes, it could be considerable. If it is, then the NYC DEP is prepared to halt the project. It's almost I guess it's even on a daily basis. It's sort of go, no, go. Are we okay? And go, no, go. And are we okay? Now, they have models and meteorological predictions like I probably wouldn't understand half of them. But they have all that in this sort of machine learning way, but it's human beings who look at that and make that decision of go, no go, depending on what's in the forecast. I'm pretty confident that they're going to take that responsibility seriously. And if there's like, because we generally had the worst flooding when there's like a doubling up of hurricanes, very often these days, if a particular rainstorm is intense and stays stationary. Well, that's the sort of thing that the outlooks can probably give you relatively accurately within a few days. And I think that the NYC DEP is going to take that responsibility pretty seriously and will on a daily basis be making those go, no go decisions.
Well, and we've seen an increase in those storms just kind of hanging around for a few days. According to this precipitation outlook for July through September, just to put this in perspective, the Atlantic hurricane season forecast for this year, the 30 year historical average for named storms, 14. Last year there were 19. This year's forecast, 20 to 25. Those are just the named storms that they've been naming recently. Hurricanes. A 30-year historical average of 7 last year, 7 this year. 8 to 12 predicted in this forecast, and major hurricanes 4 to 7. So again, we cannot be blind to the fact that climate change is impacting us, and it's going to impact this project if you know, day to day, as you said.
Right, and that's one of the things that I'm sort of rooting for them to be able to get the job done, because as we pass year to year, the impacts of climate change will only become more impressive and difficult to judge beforehand. So, as there is a risk involved with this. There is a risk. I mean, we're concerned because our concern is the Delaware River Basin. But for people in the NYC DEP, their concern is the drinking water for New York. And as you know, half of New York City's drinking water comes from the three combined reservoirs. They're shutting that down. They've spent a lot of time and money getting the rest of the system up and running so that it can be at its maximum height when our reservoirs are no longer accessible to New York City. So they're on a wing and a prayer as well for how soon will they be able to bring those reservoirs back into use, so New York City doesn't go dry. So there are significant responsibilities on both ends of this project. And then the problem, of course, is that the leak is enormous.
Yeah.
You know, when we're looking at a time when we might have more of droughts, you don't want all that water just floating down the Hudson being of no use to anybody, right? You do want the aqueduct to get fixed, but there's no ironclad guarantee that there is not risk involved.
One bright spot, I guess, Amy Shallcross, the Delaware River Basin Commission's manager of water resource operations, said there might be some pretty good fishing, though.
Yes, yes. So the trout people, the trout crazy people, will be very happy, hopefully.
We love the trout crazy people.
I'm sorry, Tim, what'd you say?
I said we love the trout crazy people.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. I love anyone who is passionate about any aspect of our watershed. The river, the bugs, the critters, you know, the appearance of cleaner, fresher, cleaner water. Anyone who is concerned with any of that, I'm happy that they are concerned.
Meg McGuire is the founder and publisher of Delaware Currents. The article about the Delaware Aqueduct shutdown is at DelawareCurrents.org, and you can see all of the previous coverage about the aqueduct. And there's also a link to the DRBC information page at NJ.gov at the bottom of that article. Meg McGuire, thank you so much. Thanks for keeping an eye on the watershed for all of us.
Thanks, Tim. You have a good day.
You too. Take a break, and when we come back, local economic perspective from James B. Huntington with Workshift Live. This is Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution, CFOSNY.org, and from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, host of On Point. Each hour of On Point is a journey to help make complicated issues understandable. Every issue brings more questions, like how did we get here? Why is this happening? And what does it mean? And how do we fix it? So let's figure this out and make sense of the world together. Join me weekday mornings at 11 here on Radio Catskill.
And welcome back to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. It's Workshift Live Mondays with James B. Huntington, Local Economic Perspective. James B. is on the line now. Good morning.
Oh, good morning, Tim. Good morning, listeners.
We're glad you're here.
I'm glad to be here.
A little trouble getting you last week. I heard there was a power outage, so glad things got fixed up and we can check in with you about the economy and local economic perspective from Mr. James B. Huntington, local economist and author. James B., what did the latest jobs report tell us?
Well, it took a step down. I rated it from going from great to good, We had 175,000 net new non-farm payroll positions, below estimates, but still way over what we need for population increases. Seasonally adjusted unemployment went up 0.1% to 3.9. The unadjusted went down typically seasonally down 0.4% to 3.5. The number of people employed went up 234,000. That's unadjusted. Then we had the two measures showing how common it is for Americans to be working or one step away, the employment population ratio and the labor force participation rate, those were narrowly mixed, with the first one down 0.1% to 60.2, and the second one holding at 62.7%. Earnings from the private non-farm payroll went up 6 cents last month to 34.75. Rather, that's not keeping up with inflation. The American job shortage number, or AJSN, improved, showing 300,000 less latent demand for new unadvertised positions, down to very close to 16 million. So we have a few concerns here. We have a lot of the secondary numbers went down. Joblessness has been between 3.7 and 3.9% adjusted for 9 months now, but it's at the top of that range. So if we get another report like this and another increase in unemployment, we're going to have to realize we're not really in the best job market category anymore. It's still going well, but it's pushing the edge of that.
So this was the lowest monthly reading so far this year. Does this indicate that maybe the Fed might end up cutting some rates without, you know, worrying about too much of an impact?
Well, not quite. The stock market loved this news. It went up 480 right at the gate after this report, and it finished plus 450 for Friday. It's not enough, not enough reason here for them to cut interest rates. That's what we're saying. We had yesterday, or the Fed met last week, rather, Wednesday. It left them the same 2 days before. Unemployment has been good. Inflation, 2.7%. It's above the goal they have now. So what's happening here with interest rates is the ones we have now are just appropriate. They're just right for the condition we're in. I mean, I know a lot of people would like to have them go down, but the situation doesn't really call for that. Inflation is still a little high. Different measures, some other measures, are higher than the 2.7% that came in. I'm talking about the personal consumption expenditures index, which they say is the favorite one of the Fed, the one they're really using to keep track of everything.
What is that index? Can you explain what the personal consumption index is?
Well, it's what people are spending. It's consumer prices in general. Mm-hmm. So they have one version with the core prices, which does not include food and energy, because those can go up and down a lot more. And that was up a little more, 0.3% over the month, 2.8% from the previous year. So food and energy actually have been going down a little bit, or going up less than that recently. They're still high, but our food certainly is still high. Energy is really not, by any kind of historical standards. So we have news on that. We have news on the oil price and all that coming up near the end of the program.
Yeah. You also got some information about, like, what folks could do that could help reduce prices. What's the one thing that folks are not doing that could help?
Well, mainly it's people are spending a lot. That's really why inflation is as high as it is that people are continuing to spend a lot. They have the money. They want to make sure they get things. They have financial stability a lot more with the extended, generally good jobs market. They know prices are not going back down, so they figure they're just going to stick with their program and spend. I mean, and people have just accepted that the prices that are around now are the real ones. People have become acclimated to that.
You may not like it, but that's where they are, right? Yeah,
exactly. And some people will complain a lot, but they'll still spend. So that's what's going on. And if people were to spend less in general, sort of go on strike, so to speak, yeah, prices would come down. But there's no sign of that. And that's why inflation is not down to 2%.
I want to ask you about like two places where people are spending. One's like a big one-time thing, and the other's like day-to-day thing. So groceries. I'll ask you about the groceries in a second. But what is something that you folks could do if they're buying, making that one big-time home purchase with the in the time of high interest rates?
Well, the suggestion we have here is to be your own real estate agent. With the changes, with the antitrust suit and what they will have to pay out and changes coming but not really arrived in terms of lower commissions, it seems to be an unusually good time for people to handle that themselves. It turns out that a lot of people are discovering when they get agents that they knew most of the stuff already, that there's really they're not adding very much value in many different cases here, especially for a large amount of money. So here are suggestions in the article I have that was in Fox Business last month. It said, if you're thinking about buying a home, ask yourself the following three questions. Do you have an internet connection? Do you have at least a seventh grade reading level? Do you like saving money? If the answer yes to all three, you're in fantastic shape to be your own agent. It may seem kind of scary, but it's a lot of money you can save if you can do that.
Something worth exploring, but please do your research before you jump in, I would suggest, as
yes,
well.
Yes, there are plenty of books. There are plenty of books on how to do that, how to list your home as a FSBO, for sale by owner.
Well, let's talk about something maybe not as ambitious. What are some ways to save money when we're buying groceries? We mentioned those prices are kind of stuck where they are. Are there some strategies for saving money?
Okay, well, there are some ideas here. You may already be hip to them and be practicing them, but they are basic sort of thing. Number one, use coupons if you have them and they're significant savings or for things you were buying anyway. Plan meals. Figure out that'll help you avoid going too far or getting the wrong things. Shop at different stores. I mean, I have four different grocery stores that they each have their strengths, their best things, and so I go to them at different times, so it really helps to have more than one. Buy in bulk if it makes sense for your family, especially if you are a member of a warehouse club, but a lot of grocery stores are now having larger offerings to compete with the Costco's and the Sam's Clubs and such. Don't shop on an empty stomach. That's an old one, but I assure you that that has value.
It does. You're right.
That's absolutely true. I mean, yes, just try it. Go after you have a meal or some such. Buy generic. Many, many generic products are made by the brand name manufacturers and just labeled differently. Check expiration dates on items. If you think you might use them, you might be near the edge as far as using them in before or after they expire and not wanting to do that, yes, then look at the items because there can be big differences. Take advantage of cash back credit cards. We'll probably see grocery stores getting percentages for credit cards, but they're not doing it now. So in the meantime, if you have one that pays a significant amount of cash back, or really any cash back, it adds up a lot, use it there. Sign up for store loyalty programs. It depends. There are some in this area that are especially good. 10 is avoid delivery. Don't have things delivered as much. That's not as, that's controversial, because if you are using delivery, then that means that you're putting together a shopping list, which is a very good thing. So it often, it saves, it costs more though. So
yeah. The delivery fee, yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about what the numbers did. Where do things end up, and where do we think they're heading?
Okay, this is a three-week change for each of these things. That's how long it's been since I've been here. Gold, $23.22. That's down $22. Lower. It was lower than that a week or two ago. Silver, $27.11. Down $1.07 from 3 weeks ago. Ratio is over 85-1. It's not as good as gold. Gold has a couple of reasons. One is the Costco, that's people buying it from Costco is making a big difference, and Chinese people are buying it, as one headline said, like there's no tomorrow. That does not apply to silver. The Dow, Jones Industrial Average, 38,676, up 693. It's been up and down for 3 weeks. I don't know if it's which way it's going from here. NASDAQ, 16,156, down 19, almost unchanged. Hurt by some of the tech results. Some of them were very good, and some of them were not good. So it sort of sat there. Oil, West Texas Intermediate, 78.85, down $5.68. Much better. That's something we should all be cheering for, is lower oil prices. And it is turning up a little at the pumps. And since this is a recent change, we should see more. As the week goes on, you should expect some gas prices to be a little lower. Bitcoin, 64,483. That's down about 1,900. It's just touring the 60s again, going from 63 to 69. And it is quite volatile, as you know, if you are into this. British pound, 1.2573, up close to 1 cent. The euro, 1.0758, about the same thing. The weaker U.S. jobs report may have helped those, the way these things are connected. Japanese, 100 yen, 65 cents. The same.
All right. Always good to connect with you. James B. Huntington with WorkShift Live. Good to hear from you, and thanks so much for your local economics perspective this morning.
Thank you, Tim.
All right. We'll check in with you next Monday.
Thank you, listeners.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, the Sullivan County Youth Book Festival in Monticello is coming up. We'll get a preview right after this. This is Radio Chatskill.
Hi, I'm Bill Williams. Join me for the Kingfisher Project Tuesday on the Local Edition, where my guest will be Dr. James L. Baker. We'll be talking about his new book, This Monstrous Obsession, Hard Lessons Learned About Addiction. That's the Kingfisher Project, Tuesday evening at 6. Only on the Local Edition.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. This week on Latino USA, Mexican singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade invites us all to seek refuge in music.
I needed to go back to my own exploring of the music and to try something different, new, to reinvent me as an artist.
That's this week on Latino USA.
Thursday afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The Sullivan County Youth Book Festival is coming up Sunday, May 19th at the E.B. Crawford Public Library in Monticello. The festival will welcome 33 authors and illustrators of books for infants through young adults. Joining us now with more is Mariana Sprouse, Youth Services Librarian with the E.B. Crawford Public Library, and Sierra Moore from the Western Sullivan Public Library. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you both for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
So how did this call come about? And were people sort of excited to be a part of it? 33 authors and illustrators. That sounds great.
Yeah, this is actually our third festival. So Sierra can talk a little bit more about how it got started a few years ago. This year, we are very excited to bring it back, and authors and illustrators have been very excited to join us. We've had people that have solicited us, asking to join us, and then we've also reached out to others who live here in New York.
So, Sierra, a youth book festival, kind of a no-brainer in some ways. Let's get the kids involved with books more. How did it come about?
Exactly. It started about, well, before pandemic. Unfortunately, we have to say
there's pre and there's post, right?
Yeah. So 2019 was the first year and it went so well. And then obviously we had COVID and that was a bummer. And so we weren't able to bring it back until 2022. And I was on the committee for that and had a hand in bringing in all those authors that year. And it was so fun to just get the excitement back into our community of reading.
So what happens at the book festival when, you're a parent, you're bringing your kids? What can folks expect?
Well, we have door prizes, first of all, which is very exciting for everybody.
That's number one.
obviously, you can buy the books before you meet the authors and illustrators, which is also very exciting because you get to go shopping, and who doesn't love that? And then we have a whole tent full of all the authors and illustrators, so then they can walk around, meet them, take pictures with them, get their books signed.
Ask them questions.
Yeah,
and
anything that they want.
Are there authors and illustrators locally? Are they from all over?
They're all from New York. Some of them are local to Monticello, and some of them are coming in from the city or from, further out even.
We had some from Jersey before, I think one from Connecticut, as long as they're in a drivable distance.
What have you heard from people that have been to this before, and what do they like about it, Sierra?
Well, we've heard that it's free. It's a free event. So you don't have to buy the books. You can just come. You can meet the authors. You can have a fun day. We have character meet and greets. We're going to have Elephant and Piggy. They're wonderful characters from picture books. I don't know if you know them.
I'm not really familiar, but I might get to know them.
And we have face painting. That's always the biggest hit, where kids just line up. And it's a never-ending line of kids wanting to get their face painted. And different musical performers and events going on the whole day.
I understand also there's an interactive performance from Farm Arts Collective this year.
Yes, they're going to be on stilts, which is always very exciting for everybody.
They were there last time too, and I love seeing them. It was so disorienting looking up, and they're just these super tall people, but it's so fun and the kids love it.
What's the feedback you've gotten from the authors and illustrators who've participated? What do they love about it?
I mean, we're a little biased, but we have only gotten positive feedback, which we love to hear. I mean, if there is something to critique, we want to hear that too. But they love how organized it is, because we do. We spend a long time organizing the event, and we have a whole committee dedicated to it. And just, we provide them lunch, and they love that. And the instructions to get to the building are easy, and just,
That's important. Mm-hmm. Find your way. Mm-hmm. Also part of this is the award ceremony for the Sullivan County BOCES Cross County Reading Challenge. What is the Cross County Reading Challenge?
So they have a challenge for each school district in the county, and the kids are able to log their reading time and how much they read. And it's kind of a competition between everyone and every school district. So whoever can log the most amount of time obviously wins.
Uh-huh.
And so it has been neck and neck, I think, between a few schools this year. And we're excited to present those awards.
Do we know who the two big competitors in the lead are here? Or
I don't know if we're allowed to share that news or if it's a surprise.
All right. Well,
very exciting keeping track of it all.
All will be revealed at the Sullivan County Youth Book Festival coming up on May 19th. What else do you want folks to know about the festival?
The first person or the 100th person that enters the tent will get a free gift card to buy books at the festival.
Oh, wow. Cool.
When we're working with Oblong Books, they're located out in Dutchess County, but they're a wonderful vendor to work with, and they'll have everything that we need. And I don't know, it's just such a fun event to meet authors and get books signed.
And while you're here, I want to ask you about some other things that are going on at E.B. Crawford and also with Western Sullivan Public Library. You guys are doing so much programming. Anything else you want to highlight to make sure folks are aware of, especially as we start the spring-summer season here?
Sure. Actually, this Saturday, May 11th, we are hosting one of our local artists whose artwork is currently on display in our community room. And it's been up for about a week. It's absolutely beautiful.
Beautiful, I agree.
Absolutely beautiful. And so it'll be really great to meet her as well. What else do we have going on?
Everything. All of the programming.
All the programs. We have programs for children. We have story times every week.
Summer reading is starting soon.
Oh, yeah. My gosh. And the theme this summer is adventures. So we're going to town with everything adventure. Scavenger hunts and Minecraft and water play for the little ones and like all kinds of fun things planned for this summer. What else is coming up? This Thursday, May 9th, we're doing a Mother's Day crafternoon. So little kids can
crafternoon.
Crafternoon.
Sure,
yes.
We're all big on the pun here.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
At Radio Chat Skill.
yeah. So for anybody who has a mother figure in their life and they would like to make something special to celebrate Mother's Day, they are welcome to drop in and do that with us.
I'm just looking at your calendar here. You've got something almost every day. There's chair yoga with Susan Mendoza, who we know from the Chi Hive today. Mm-hmm. A Yiddish circle on May 8th, a virtual author talk with Nina Simon, a double health seminar about diabetes and prevention. Such a great range of programming at E.B. Crawford. WSPL has a lot going on, too. Anything else you want to highlight for what's going on with the branches for you guys?
I'm excited. We have our book clubs coming up this month. Our first one of the month will be this Friday, actually, at our Jeffersonville branch at 4 p.m. And I don't require registration because I feel like that's, for adult book clubs at least, it's kind of stressful sometimes to plan your schedules. And we have a cool paint party going on at each branch for kids. And we're doing that in collaboration with the Berryville Area Arts Association. And that's like they're going to try to paint like Picasso and like a very childish.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, because they are cool. Children, and it'll be fun to see like what they produce from that. And we have our recurring craft programs that I do and various things.
It's great to see you guys together. You know, you're representing different libraries, different parts of the libraries, but there's an alliance here, the Sullivan County Public Library Alliance.
Definitely.
You're here with one goal, to get people more involved with all of these things and reading, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Good.
We all work close together. I love it.
You're doing good. You're all smiles, too. Let's remind folks again when the Youth Book Festival is coming up and where they can get more information.
Okay, so the festival is on Sunday, May 19th, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. You can get more information at scybookfest.org, or you can contact any of your public libraries, and we can direct you to that information as well.
And the book festival is at the E.B. Crawford Library in Monticello.
Yes, it is.
All right. Great. Thank you guys so much. It's Mariana Sprouse from the E.B. Crawford Public Library and Sierra Moore from the Western Sullivan Public Libraries. Thank you guys so much.
Thanks
for having us.
We'll take a break. And when we come back, it's ramp season. We'll learn about the ramp festival coming up on Saturday at Catskill Brewery right after this. This is Radio Chatskill.
I'm Mary Louise Kelly. Another way to help us bring you the news is donate a vehicle you don't need. Car, truck, motorcycle. You can donate to this station and it could mean hundreds of dollars of support. Thanks.
We accept any vehicle, running or not. Donate your car, boat, or motorcycle at wjffradio.org.
Last year, over 100,000 people died from drug overdoses driven by fentanyl. And the fastest growing group is under 19. Fentanyl is the number one cause of overdose in Sullivan County. Whether you're a parent or an educator, you can have the right conversation now to potentially save a kid's life. Protect kids from the dangers of fentanyl. More information and resources at naturalhigh.org. Paid for by Catholic Charities of Orange, Sullivan, and Ulster.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. It's ramp season, and Wild Hudson Valley is celebrating with a ramp and forage festival at the Catskill Brewery on Saturday. Joining us with more from Wild Hudson Valley is Anna Plattner. Anna, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Now, for folks who may not know what a ramp is, can you please inform them we're not talking about an easier way to get into a building? What are we talking about?
Yeah, so ramps, they're also called wild leeks. They're an allium species, so they're related to onions and garlic, but they're a native forest understory plant. So instead of growing in an open field, They grow very slowly over many years underneath our forested canopy. And they're a spring ephemeral plant. So that means that they take advantage of the time in early spring before leaves even come out on the trees. So ramp season is already honestly about half over, a little more depending on exactly where you live. Because these plants, by the time the leaves come out on the trees, they're done. Their leaves are already dying back for the year, and they're perennial. So that means that they stick around for many, many years, and they're delicious. They are, they're garlic and onions, but they have their own unique flavor.
Yeah, how would you describe that flavor? I was going to ask. I mean, I kind of always think of it as like a form of a garlic, but really, how do you describe it?
It's tough hard. To describe exactly. You'll yeah. just have to have it yourself. It's maybe more on the garlic side than the onion side, but it's definitely a combination. And you can eat every part of the plant, so the leaves, the stems, and the bulb. And just like garlic, one bulb will divide into multiple bulbs that forms it grows clonally, so it forms divisions on that bulb over the course of many years. So instead of going from one clove to a whole head of garlic in one season, it does that maybe over the course of 5 to 8 years. It'll form a whole clump where they all grow right next to each other. And there's a lot of different ways to manage these wild plants. So because ramps are only available for about a month every spring, and they're so delicious, and it's a time of year when not much is available in terms of fresh greens. Ramps have they're very, very popular. And a lot of restaurants like to feature them on their early spring menus. People want to find them at the farmer's market. And so but because these plants are very slow growing, from a seed germinating until a plant is producing seed, it can be up to 8 years.
Wow.
So you can imagine if you come through and harvest a bunch of ramps in the woods, you're potentially setting that population way back and maybe even over-harvesting to the point where it doesn't recover. So there's, while it is very popular and it has this great reputation of being this delicious early spring green, you have to be careful in terms of where you buy it, and if you're harvesting it yourself, how you harvest it. So that's exactly what we're going to be getting into at the festival on Saturday. So we're going to have ramps there. We're going to have ramps available for people to taste. The Catskill food truck at Catskill Brewery is going to have ramps featured in a number of items on their menu, and we'll also be selling ramps, and we'll be talking about all of the nuance that's really needed to be able to ensure that you're participating in an activity and participating in, you're eating ramps that haven't been harvested unsustainably in a way that they won't survive in the long term.
Well, I think that's important for folks to know because, part of the popularity, I think, is that you can find them almost everywhere, even in your own backyard. But maybe what folks don't know is what you're saying is that you have to pick them responsibly. They're not like weeds just growing around everywhere.
Exactly. They're definitely not. They tend to grow on cool, moist forest habitat where it doesn't dry out like on a south and west hot-facing hillside. It needs that north and east-facing hillside where you've got sugar maples, maybe a stream flowing through. They like to grow like just above stream banks. And because they're only available seasonally, it's easy to miss them. Not everyone goes hiking or out for walks on their property in that window when they're really above ground. So that also, leads to them being so ephemeral.
This ramp and a forage festival on Saturday at Catskill Brewery is very much in line with your mission at Wild Hudson Valley. Your mission is to inspire learning and build that connection through nature and wild foods and history, right?
Exactly. I think by, highlighting all the wonderful native, edible, and medicinal plants that we have in the landscape in the Hudson Valley and up in the Catskill Mountains. Our name might be Wild Hudson Valley, but we do a lot in the Catskill Mountains. And a lot of our research in terms of historical native practices spans the Hudson and Delaware valleys. And that's a whole other thing we can get into. But, yeah, by raising awareness about these wonderful plants, we want to encourage people and inspire people to care about them. You know, eating something is a great way for people to be like, this is wonderful, I want to keep this around, and to connect with it. And to have those connections, maybe on a guided walk or a workshop where they're having a shared experience with other people and everyone goes home inspired to be a better steward of our planet. So that's sort of where we're coming from in everything that we do at Wild Hudson Valley. And whether we're talking about ramps or ginseng or everything, stinging nettle, wood nettle, all the different, all the many different edible and medicinal plants we have here in our landscape.
And as part of this forage festival on Saturday at Catskill Brewery at 1 o'clock, there is that ramp stewardship and springtime foraging workshop. So you'll be walking around the property at Catskill Brewery and looking at the plants there. And do folks need to register or can they just show up around one?
Nope. Yeah, it'll just be sort of open, very informal. You know, we'll be there from 12 to 4 for the whole time of the festival with a table, with a bunch of different wild plants and, information about what we do. And people can just come up and chat and talk all about this. But at one, we are going to, sort of head out, gather a group together and head out and walk the property. It's not a large property. And so we'll see what we find. We might encounter a number of edible plants. We might not see that much. But the point is to get out there and look at these plants and have a more of a conversation with people sharing that knowledge. And we want to hear what other people's experience is too. What have you eaten? What have you heard about? What questions do you have? So it's very much like a way for us to have a little bit of a formal group to just talk about and look for these plants.
Very hands-on. Also, though, as you wander off trail, some important clothing reminders for folks who might participate.
Yeah, so we probably will not likely be staying on the trails. I know there's some open meadow habitat, and there might be some shrubs, for example, on the edge of the meadow, but we might have to leave the trail to get there. So, just wearing long pants and closed-toed shoes just in case we're wandering through, like, some brambles or, tick habitat. Nothing major, but, just probably, high-heeled sandals is not the way to go.
Be prepared, yeah. All right, the Ramp and Forage Festival is at the Catskill Brewery on Saturday from noon to 4:00. The 1 o'clock Ramp Stewardship and Foraging Workshop, it's at 1 o'clock. Also at Catskill Brewery, and that's in Livingston Manor. There's more information at catskillbrewery.com or wildhudsonvalley.com. We've been speaking with Anna Plattner, who is from Wild Hudson Valley, the forest farm and educational organization focused on the history, ecology, wild food, and land stewardship practices. Anna, thanks so much for joining us, and have fun at the awesome Forage Festival.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Thank you so much.
All right, that's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. You can hear this episode, previous episodes, and all of our local programming at our website, wjffradio.org. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Radio Catskill supporters include SUNY Sullivan, a community college in the Sullivan Catskills focused on preparing students for the future. More information at sunysullivan.edu. Livingston Manor, dining, shopping, and the arts at the gateway to the Catskill Park. LivingstonManorNY.com. And listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Hi, I'm Kusar Grace KG, host of the Music Emporium. 2 hours of great music right here on Radio Catskill. Sometimes I start out with a little bit of talk concerning things in the world for the week. Then I jump into some tunes that you will enjoy. Jazz, funk, blues, and more. So come and hang out with me. The Music Emporium, Tuesday night, 7 to 9, right here on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, W233 AH Monticello. Streaming live at WJFFradio.org. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Today's forecast, milder this afternoon with partly sunny skies. High 67, might see a thunderstorm pop up every once in a while, though. Cloudy with a low 43 tonight. Tomorrow, warmer and a high of 75. On Point is next. It's 11 o'clock.